Greetings, everyone. Welcome to The Law Hour, an editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5, 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network, and in more than 70 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, please visit my web page. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on modern money mechanics. Well, banking is the most important subject intelligent persons can investigate and reflect upon. It is so important that our present civilization may collapse unless it is widely understood and the defects remedied very soon. Now, that statement was made by a fellow named Robert Hemphill back in the 1950s. He was the former credit manager of the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, Georgia, an insider, a Federal Reserve banker. Let me repeat that statement again. Maybe you didn't quite grasp it. This is an insider back in the 1950s. This guy knows what he's talking about. Nobody ever listened to him. Nobody ever pays attention to these kinds of doomsayers, these chicken littles. But he said banking is the most important subject that intelligent persons can investigate and reflect upon. Well, when I read a statement like that, those of us then in America that do not reflect upon banks and banking, money and monetary policy, must not be the intelligent people in the nation. That's what he's saying. Second sentence, he says, it is so important that our present civilization may collapse unless it is widely understood and the defects remedied very soon. Here's an insider banker, Federal Reserve Bank, Atlanta, Georgia, 1950, and he says, our civilization may collapse unless intelligent people pay attention to the monetary system and correct its defects, and do that soon. Well, 54 years is hardly soon, is it? Now, in this 54 years, see, 1950, I was 11 years old. So when Robert Hemphill made that statement, I was an 11-year-old kid. Today I'm 65 years old, 54 years later. It not only hasn't been remedied, there evidently are not very many intelligent people in America reflecting upon this one subject of the monetary system, is there? And I've watched it become progressively worse and worse. For instance, when I was a kid in 1950, ham and eggs was a dollar. There was no sales tax. Today, there's a 7, 8, 9% sales tax for every dollar that you spend. You not only pay 17% income tax for the money you earn, you then turn around and pay a 6, 7, 8, 9% sales tax to spend it. Have you ever thought of that? It costs you 16% of everything you create and produce for your Social Security tax. Add them up. 16% for Social Security, 17% for income, and then add another 8 or 9%. That's 40% of everything you create and produce on three taxes. You got 14 taxes to pay. 14. Every time you buy a gallon of gas, it costs you 50 or 60 cents in tax. Now complain about this $2 gasoline. Gasoline wouldn't be near as expensive if you weren't paying 4 bits a gallon tax. So here's the guy, Robert Hemphill, and he says, banking is the most important subject that intelligent persons can investigate and reflect upon. It's so important that our present civilization may collapse unless it is widely understood and the defects remedied very soon. Robert Hemphill, former credit manager of the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, Georgia, said that in 1950. Now, all of you unintelligent people, and turned to another station and listened to rock and roll. For the two or three of you intelligent people, hang on. We'll be back with more on Ron Paul and Edwin Vieira on the Modern Muddy Mechanics right after this. Hey, back in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. Today, it's down to less than 38 days. You know, we Americans produce grain for export, and then we turn around and import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations like Walmart, importing our food and food supplies from Mexico and China. And these multinational corporations support the Global 2000 Population Reduction Program. You know, globalization is probably a good deal for business, but globalization is not good for you and it's not good for me. You know, back in 1940, we all had a pantry full of food to feed our families for a year. Not 73 days, we had it for a year. Today we've got a 3-day food supply in our refrigerators and we believe in our supermarket system of just-in-time delivery and that it's going to feed us forever. Now, over the past 60 years, we Americans have traded a 1-year food supply for 3 days. Does that strike you as being safe, sound, or prudent? And then these Global 2000, the mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, I call them, they plan to use famine, plague, disease, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. Well, at least that's what they tell us through the Club of Rome and many of these other think tank organizations, you know, like the Bilderbergers, Club of Rome, CFR, Trilateral Commission. You know, these evil madmen with their Global 2000 genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for. And I say, let them die for their cause. And that's you and I live for our cause. Now, let me show you from the scripture how to be a live survivor instead of a dead victim. Hey, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call right now. The number's 417-273-4967. I also have a business school and a subsistence and survival school. They're both available on compact disc for adult home education or home study. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine, send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Do it right now before you forget, would you? Or you can call me direct, 417-273-4967. Ron Paul. Ron Paul, On Paper Money and Tyranny, published by Rents.com. That's R-E-N-S-E.com. It was published 9-7-2003. You can also get it off of the Congressional Record. It was a speech given by Ron Paul in the House of Representatives on September the 5th, 2003, reported September the 7th, 2003 on Rents. Ron Paul goes on to say, he said, economic intervention financed by inflation is high-stakes government. It provides the incentive for the big money to invest in gaining government control. The big money comes from those who have it, corporations and banking interests. That's why literally billions of dollars are spent on elections and lobbying. Bribery is what this is called. The only way to restore equity is to change the primary function of government from economic planning and militarism to protecting liberty, which was the intention of our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and our Founding Fathers. Without money, the poor and the middle class are disenfranchised since access, for the most part, requires money. Political control comes from money. Obviously, this is not a partisan issue since both major parties are controlled by wealthy special interests. Only the rhetoric is different. You know, our current economic problems are directly related to the monetary excesses of 3 decades and more, and more recent efforts by the Federal Reserve to thwart the correction that the market is forcing upon us. Since 1998, there's been a sustained attack on corporate profits, and before that, profits and earnings were inflated and fictitious, with WorldCom and Enron being prime examples. In spite of the 13 rate cuts since 2001, economic growth has not been restored. Paper money encourages speculation, excessive debt, and misdirected investment. The marketplace, however, always moves in the direction of eliminating bad investments, liquidating debt, and reducing speculative excesses. Our free marketplace has been replaced by five-year plans on the Soviet and Chinese order. Central planning from Washington or central planning from your state capital have now replaced the free market system. What we have seen, especially since the stock market peak of early 2000, is a knockdown, drag-out battle between the Fed's effort to avoid a recession, limit the recession, and stimulate growth with its only tool, money creation, while the market demands the elimination of bad investments and excess debt. The Federal Reserve was also motivated to save the stock market from collapsing, which in some ways they have been able to do. It's market manipulation by the Fed, and the market, in contrast, will insist on liquidation of unsustainable debt, removal of investment mistakes made over several decades, and a dramatic revaluation of the stock market. In this go-round, the Fed has pulled out all the stops and is more determined than ever. Yet the market is saying that new and healthy growth cannot occur until a major cleansing of the system occurs. In conventional terms, this is called deflation. Now, does anyone think that tariffs and interest rates of 1% will encourage the rebuilding of our steel and textile industries anytime soon? You know, obviously something more is going to be needed. The world's central bankers are concerned with the lack of response to low interest rates, and they have joined in a concerted effort to rescue the world economy through a policy of protecting the dollar's role in that world economy. Denying that inflation exists and then justifying unlimited expansion of the dollar money supply. To maintain confidence in the dollar, gold prices must be held in check. In the 1960s, our government didn't want a vote of no confidence in the dollar, and for a couple of decades, the price of gold was artificially held at $35 an ounce. That, of course, did not last. Now, in recent years, there's been a coordinated effort by the world central bankers to keep the gold price in check by dumping part of their large hoard of gold into the marketplace. This has worked to a degree, but just as it could not be sustained in the 1960s, until Nixon declared the Bretton Woods Agreement dead in 1971, this effort will fail, just like that effort failed. Now, let me make a little editorial comment here. These world central banks in Austria, Russia, China, Japan, France, Great Britain, every once in a while you'll see a big front page ad, and it'll say, Central Bank of Austria sells 80 tons of gold. Central Bank of France sells 60 tons of gold. Or Russia threatens to blast the gold market with 130 tons of gold. Well, let me tell you a little story here. Some years back, my broker Frank and I were talking, and I said, well, how is the gold market, Frank? Now, what's the supply like? Physical gold supply. And he said, well, if you've been paying attention to the gold market, it's oversold by 15 years. That is, the total gold production worldwide is around 24,000 tons a year. And it sounds like a lot of gold, doesn't it? 24,000 tons a year. All of that gold production has been sold into the future on futures 15 years. Let's just figure that out. Take 24,000 times 15 years. That's 360,000 tons that's already sold. If you want delivery of 10 tons of gold in the morning, you can't get it. It's not available anywhere in the world. Now, if you want 10 ounces in the morning, that's available for us little guys down here at the bottom of the heap. But if you're an Arab sheik and you're selling millions of dollars a day or a week worth of oil, and you wanted to get paid in gold for your oil, you can forget it. It ain't going to happen. Now, when the Bank of Austria, this was a case that I saw in the headlines a couple of years ago, said, we're going to sell 84 tons of gold. They did. They sold it into the marketplace, and France bought it. The Central Bank of Austria sold 84 tons of gold to the French Central Bank. And boy, that news depressed gold prices. Because you and I, the little guys out on the street, say, oh my God, the price of gold is $315 an ounce. I better sell in the morning because the price of gold is going lower. And it did go lower. So then the Bank of France, they sold 60 tons to the Bank of England. The Bank of England sold 80 or 90 tons to the Bank of somebody, Italy or somebody, and the Bank of Italy. So it's just a musical chairs game for the purpose of depressing the price on artificial news of gold sales coming into the marketplace. Truth of the matter is, there isn't enough gold being produced each and every year to fill the demand. Now that's where reality is. The market price of gold is important because it reflects the ultimate confidence in the dollar. Now an artificially low price for gold contributes to false confidence in the paper dollar. When this is lost, more chaos ensues as the market adjusts for the delay. Can you imagine what's going to happen when the Chinese wake up one of these days? And they say, listen, we can't get paid by the Americans. They give us paper, they give us credit, but they don't give us tanks and boats and Caterpillar tractors. So we're not going to buy any more of their worthless treasury debt. Now, we're trying to sustain and support our Social Security programs and our welfare programs. And to do that, we have to borrow money. The president's going to borrow $500 billion this year for our current operating expenses at the federal level. State governments have to borrow money to support all these welfare recipients and all of these bridges that they're going to build and roads they want to fix. Now just picture this. The Chinese and the Japanese are buying virtually all of that treasury debt, $2 billion a day. $2 billion a day. What happens if they quit buying that? Do you know where the price of gold is going to go? When the conversion to gold finally hits Joe Sixpack on the street, the price of gold will go to hundreds of dollars an ounce. But you won't be able to take physical possession of it because the gold mines who are going to go to work and they're going to try to produce more gold won't be able to supply the demand. Well, not for 15 years at current production. Now, it isn't that there's any shortage of gold out there, boys and girls. There's plenty of gold out there. It isn't that there's any shortage of gold for conducting world and national commerce. There's plenty. But it's manipulated by the Federal Reserve and by the governments of the world to make you believe that paper's valuable and gold is worthless. Well, okay. I like gold at $400 an ounce. I'll buy all that I can get. And I'm going to stockpile it and I'll convert it later to land. Later, I will buy. When the prices collapse like they did in Argentina and Brazil, then I'll come into the marketplace like Bernard Baruch and the Harrimans in the 1930s. We'll sell when prices are high. We'll come back in and we'll buy in 5 or 6, 7 years when you people have finally spent everything that you've got and everything you can get your hands on, and you're selling at distressed prices your property, what you've got left of it. I'll be there to buy it from you for pennies on the dollar. This monetary policy today is designed to demonetize gold. The market price of gold is important because it reflects the ultimate confidence that you have in the dollar. So an artificially low price for gold contributes to this false confidence that you have in paper. More chaos ensues as the market adjusts for this delay. And monetary policy today is designed to demonetize gold and guarantee for the first time that paper can serve as an adequate substitute in the hands of wise central bankers. Well, I guess you're not wise enough to manage your own financial affairs, so you need a wise central banker as your guardian to manage your financial affairs for you. We call him Alan Greenspan in this country. Trust then has to be transferred from gold to the politicians and bureaucrats who are in charge of our monetary system. This totally fails to recognize the obvious reason that market participants throughout history have always preferred to deal with real assets, real money, rather than government paper. This contest between paper and honest money, gold and silver, is of much greater significance than many people realize. We should know the outcome of this struggle within the next decade. Now, this struggle has gone on before. It's not something new. We've had this struggle over gold and silver and paper money for thousands of years. See, in the old days before we had paper, what they used to do is take copper and stick it into the gold coins and debase them. The Romans were doing that, the Egyptians, the Babylonians, the Assyrians. The debasing of your money has been going on. The theft from you has been going on by your governments for thousands of years. That's why God told you. Get government out of the money business. Get government out of your lives. Practice my law, and you'll come out better. We said, oh no, God, we got to have a real government. We got to have, you know, presidents and prime ministers and dictators and kings. We got to have a real government, not this phony baloney crap from you. Well, okay. Now you got the real McCoy, the real deal. You got a real Congress and a real President Bush out there who's inflating your money supply by $4 trillion over the next, 18 months. By the end of 2005, they hope to have $13 trillion in circulation. This is going to be monetized, and then it will cut down on your percentage of GDP to debt, the ratio. You're going to pay your national debt with more worthless paper, is what that boils down to. We'll just print the paper and pay the debt. Okay, but every dollar you put out into circulation makes the dollar that's in circulation worth less. I can remember when a Coca-Cola sold for a nickel. A nickel for a Coke. I saw one the other day, I think it was 80 cents. When you go into a motel, you got to put a dollar bill in there to get a Coke. It isn't that the Coke is more valuable, it's that your dollar, your money, is less valuable. A 1955 Ford sold for $1,600 cash in 1955. Today, that same Ford sells for $20,000. It's not because the Ford car is better, it's that it's actually worth less. It's got more plastic and less steel and more artificial products in it than ever before. It's not nearly as durable as the 55 Ford, but it sells for 10 times as much money. 10 times more money for less value. Alan Greenspan, although once a strong advocate for the gold standard, now believes he knows what the outcome of this battle is going to be. Is it just wishful thinking on his part? Well, in an answer to a question that I asked before the Financial Services Committee in February 2003, Chairman Greenspan made an effort to convince me that paper money now works just as well as gold. Alan Greenspan, the guy that was advocating gold and told us the truth in 1966, now says, hey, listen, this paper money works just as well as gold now. Hey, listen, I'm going to take the gold. You take the paper. Let me know how it works out, would you? Now, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Hey, did you know that in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth? Well, today, it's down to 38 days. In fact, it's less than 38 days. And these global 2000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, as I call them, plan to use famine, disease, plague, and pestilence to reduce Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years under the Club of Rome plan. You know, in Revelation chapter 6, God Almighty told us exactly the same thing in essentially the same words, using false prophets, war, famine, and disease as the catalyst. You know, in 1920, nearly 50% of our people lived on the land as subsistence farmers, producing their own food and food for the rest of the world and food for you and me. Today, we Americans have chosen to live in the city. Today, only 3% of us live on the land, and 97% of us then are no longer self-sufficient in our food production. We've got more people locked up in our jails than we have producing food for us. And then we produce grain for export, all right, and then we turn around and import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support this global 2000 world population control program. These globalists with the genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for. And I say, let them die for their cause. And let you and I live for our cause. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call right now to order yours. The number's 417-273-4967. And my subsistence and survival school is now available in compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email, send me an email request, and order that free general law CD package. That's step one. Or if you're online, you can go to the web, georgegordon.org. Go to georgegordon.org, click on to my email, and then send me an email request, or call direct 417-273-4967. I had a guy who was talking to my wife the other day, and he said, I don't need to buy one of those schools. Well, I'll just listen to Gordon on the radio, and I'll just pick up a little here and a little there, and one of these days I'll have it all, and I'll get it free. Well, I'll do everything I can to teach as much as I can over the radio, but it won't ever supplant or take the place of one of my 5 or 10 day schools, because each and every one of these schools is directed at solving your problem. You got a problem. You've got a big debt problem. You need to unload that debt problem. And I can't teach everything over the air directly on these 60-minute broadcasts. I can cover a lot of material, but you're not going to get it all. You'll die a long time before you get the answer to the riddle. So why don't you call and get that free general law CD package. Start there. And then let's start talking about educating you in my business school. You know, you should be making $100,000 a year in these inflated dollars. See, in 1950, people were making $3,000 a year. You were well paid at $3,000 a year, 1950. If you were making $10,000 a year, it would be the equivalent of making 3 times the median wage. The median wage was $3,000. Today, the median wage is $41,000. Half the people make over that, half the people make under that. You're entitled to great wealth. You should be making $100,000 a year. If you're not making $100,000 a year today in this inflated economy, you're wasting your time. And I can teach you how to do that. I can teach anybody. If you've got average intelligence. Now, if you're stupid, I might not be able to get through to you. Making money is not the problem. Hanging on to it's the problem. And there's a bigger problem hanging on to it than there is making it. You got people out here with PhDs driving taxi cabs. These aren't dumb people. These people have a lot of knowledge. They got a lot of skills and ability in their chosen profession. I had a scientist here one time. He was a laser physicist. A laser physicist. Do you know how many of those there are in the world? He said there were less than 30 in the world when he was here about 10 years ago, about 1993, 4, 5, long in here. You know how much money that guy was getting paid? He had a security clearance that got him into Alamogordo, New Mexico. I mean, this guy works for the Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley. He worked at the Lawrence Radiation Lab. He's got a security clearance that is so valuable that he came to school here because he was afraid that he was going to lose his security clearance over his debt problem. Debt. Making $80,000 a year. I was amazed. I told the man, I said, you are one of 30 people in the world with your skills and ability, and you get paid less than one of my graduates that makes $100,000 a year growing vegetables out here and selling them in the organic market. I teach a class on how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. I could take you totally unskilled. You don't have to be even a high school graduate for crying out loud, and you can make $100,000 a year. I mean, if you got some real talent out here, some real ability, let's go out and use it intelligently and go make some money. You're not going to get that over the air here, but you'll get it in my business class or my $100,000 on 25 acres class. Send for that free CD and let me tell you more of the story. Listen, we're talking about Ron Paul, the subject matter here, modern money mechanics. Modern money mechanics. Ron Paul. He runs on the Republican ticket. He's actually a constitutionalist. Constitutionalist. This guy believes in our Constitution. Says, hey, listen, you know, if we'd stick with our Constitution, we'd probably make more money and do better. The market price of gold is important. And it's being manipulated by the forces, the banking forces, to make you believe that it's not valuable. It's all right. They've got everybody in the world believing that. But let me tell you, those Arab sheikhs and those Indians, the people in India, they are buying every ounce of gold they can get their hands on. The world supply of gold is sold 15 years out into the future. There isn't any major amounts of gold, physical gold, out there for you to buy. The minor gold market, you know, the 10, 20, 30 ounce buys. Oh yeah, that's still here. When you're buying gold by the ounce, it's available. When you're buying gold by the ton, it's gone. No physicals. And monetary policy today is designed to demonetize gold. Alan Greenspan, although he was once a strong advocate for gold back in the 60s, he now believes that he knows what the outcome of this battle is going to be. Is it just wishful thinking on his part? Well, in an answer to a question that I asked before the Financial Services Committee in February 2003, Chairman Greenspan made an effort to convince me, Ron Paul, that paper money now works as well as gold. Now, I've been quite surprised, and I must say pleased, by the fact that central banks have been able to effectively stimulate many of the characteristics and simulate many of the characteristics of the gold standard by constraining the degree of finance in a manner which effectively brought down the general price levels. The way we've brought down the general price levels is to go to China and hire those people at 14 cents an hour and export our jobs from America to India. Earlier in December 2002, Mr. Greenspan spoke before the Economic Club of New York and addressed the same subject. He said, the record of the past 20 years appears to underscore the observation that although pressures for excess issuance of fiat money are chronic, a prudent monetary policy maintained over a protracted period of time can contain the forces of inflation. There are several problems with this optimistic assessment. First, efficient central bankers will never replace the invisible hand of a commodity monetary standard. Vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear will always interfere. Second, using government price indexes to measure the success of a managed fiat currency should not be reassuring. These indexes can be arbitrarily altered to simply imply a successful monetary policy when in fact it is not a successful monetary policy, but a failed monetary policy. And also, price increases of consumer goods are not a litmus test for measuring the harm done by the money managers at the Fed. The development of overcapacity, excessive debt, and speculation still occur, even when prices happen to remain reasonably stable due to increases in productivity and technology. And particularly when this productivity and technology is put into the hands of the Chinese or the other third world nations in India, the Philippines, people who are willing to work for 14 to 90 cents an hour. Chairman Greenspan makes this his argument because he hopes he's right, that sound money is no longer necessary, and also because it's an excuse to keep the inflation of the money supply going for as long as possible. We don't know how long possible is, but as long as it's possible, we're going to continue on with this inflation policy, hoping that a miracle will restore sound growth to the economy. But that's a miracle, and miracles are made up of dreams. We're now faced with an economy that is far from robust and may get a lot worse before rebounding. And if not now, the time will soon come when the conventional wisdom of the past 90 years, since the Fed was created, will have to be challenged. And if the conditions have changed and the routine of fiscal and monetary stimulation don't work, we better prepare ourselves for the aftermath of a failed dollar system, which will not be limited to the United States. This failure will be worldwide. An interesting headline appeared in the New York Times on July 31st, 2003. Commodity costs soar, but factories don't bustle. What's observed here is a sea change in attitude by investors shifting their investment funds and speculation into things of real value and out of financial areas such as stocks and bonds. This shift shows that in spite of the most aggressive Fed policy in history in the past 3 years, the economy remains sluggish and interest rates are actually rising. What can the Fed do? Well, if this trend continues, there's little that they can do. Not only do I believe this trend is going to continue, I believe it's likely to accelerate. This policy plays havoc with our economy. It produces revenues, prompts increases in federal spending, increases in deficits and debt occur, and interest costs rise, compounding our budgetary woes. To set the circumstances that we face today are unique, and they're quite different from all of the other recessions that the Federal Reserve has had to deal with. Generally, interest rates are raised to slow the economy and dampen price inflation. At the bottom of the cycle, interest rates are lowered to stimulate the economy. But this time around, the recession came in spite of huge and significant interest rate reductions by the Fed. This aggressive policy did not prevent the recession, as was hoped. So far, it has not produced the desired recovery. Now we're at the bottom of the cycle, and interest rates not only can't be lowered, they're rising. This is unique, and it's a dangerous combination of events. This set of circumstances can only occur with fiat money and indicates that further manipulation of the money supply and interest rates by the Fed will have little, if any, effect on our economy. The odds aren't very good that the Fed will adopt a policy of not inflating the money supply because of some painful consequences that would result. Also, there would be a need to remove the pressure on the Fed to accommodate the big spenders in Congress, since there are essentially only two groups that have any influence on spending levels. That's big government liberals and big government conservatives. That's not about to happen. Poverty is going to worsen due to our monetary and fiscal policies, so spending on the war on poverty will accelerate. Our obsession with policing the world, nation building, and preemptive war are not likely to soon go away, since both Republican and Democratic leaders endorse these policies. Instead, the cost of defending the American empire is going to accelerate. The country that is getting poorer cannot pay these bills with higher taxation, nor can they find enough excess funds for the people to loan to the government. The only recourse, then, is for the Federal Reserve to accommodate and monetize the federal debt. And that, of course, is inflation. So get used to it. There's more to come. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, these genocidal policies of Global 2000 and the New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberty, and our property since Noah's flood. Now our national leaders have subscribed to a plan created by the Club of Rome, the United Nations, and the Trilateral Commission, and a whole host and plethora of other lesser policy-making think tanks, and that is to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. That's correct. I didn't stutter there. 90% is the target over the next 50 years. So I contend that we ought not to delude ourselves into believing that we're going to stop all of these mad scientists, these philosophers, preachers, and politicians in this insane scheme to enslave the world and impose a worldwide tyranny, a new world order upon all of us. But you know, you and I don't have to participate in our own demise. We do not have to help them. We do not have to finance them. Nor do we need stand helplessly by and do nothing either. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let you and I prepare to live through and survive this global 2000 New World Order nightmare. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how to do just that, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order yours right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine. Send me an email request for that free General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're covering a treatise that was written by Ron Paul. We're talking about Modern Money Mechanics. Modern Money Mechanics is a publication put out by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. It's the Federal Reserve of New York. They put out a number of publications to educate the public. I'm especially drawn to Once Upon a Dime, Federal Reserve Bank of New York. That, along with 5 other books, they're comic books. I got 5 of them here, 5 comic books. They're about the size of a funny book. And they've got nice cartoons, and their cartoon format in full color. I mean, it looks just like a Superman funny book. Only they're selling to us the story of inflation, Once Upon a Dime, the story of consumer credit. They're actually trying to educate us. They treat us like we're about 8, 9, 10 years old reading funny books, and they're going to educate us to the monetary system. And what they're selling to us is paper money. Paper money, which is, of course, unjust weights and balances, prohibited by God. He told us, stay away from that. Avoid that like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Our grandparents didn't believe it, and so they opted for this concept of paper money and a Federal Reserve, a central bank, the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto. Ron Paul, on September 5th, 2003, took the Federal Reserve to task, and he said in an address to the House of Representatives, probably heard by about 3 people, in the House of Representatives, but it's recorded for us, it's recorded for history and posterity in the congressional record, and it's on Rents, R-E-N-S-E.com. RENSE.com. You're looking for Paul Harvey on Paper, Money, and Tyranny. It was published on Rents on 9/7/2003. Why don't you call him and ask and see if you can get a copy. It's not only good reading, it's good common sense. Well, I agree, Paul said, that it would be politically tough to bite the bullet and deal with our extravagance, both fiscal and monetary, but the repercussions here at home from a loss of confidence in the dollar throughout the world will not be a pretty sight to behold. I don't see any way that we're going to avoid this crisis. It's now admitted that the deficit is out of control, with next year's deficit reaching over $500 billion, not counting the billions borrowed from trust funds like Social Security. I'm sticking to my prediction that within a few years, the national debt will increase over $1 trillion in one fiscal year. So far, so good. No big market reactions. The dollar is holding its own, and the administration and congressional leaders are not alarmed. But they ought to be. You know, a country that's getting poorer and poorer cannot pay these bills with higher taxation. Now, we do have some options to minimize the suffering. If we decided to, we could permit some alternatives to the current system of money and banking that we have today. Already, we took a big step in this direction. Gold was illegal to own between 33 and 76. That is 1933 and 1976. Today, millions of Americans do own some gold. Gold contracts are now legal, but a settlement of any dispute is always in Federal Reserve notes. This makes gold contracts of limited value. For gold to be an alternative to Federal Reserve notes, taxes on any transactions in gold must be removed, both sales and capital gains. Holding gold should be permitted in any pension fund, just as dollars are permitted in a checking account of these funds. Now, repeal of all legal tender laws is a must. Sound money never requires the force of legal tender laws. Only paper money requires law to enforce upon people to accept it. We don't need any laws to force people to accept gold. They'll either do it or they won't. It's a choice that people should have to make. These proposals, even if put in place tomorrow, would not solve all the problems we face. It would, though, legalize freedom of choice in money, and many who worry about having their savings wiped out by a depreciating dollar would at least have another option. This option would ease some of the difficulties that are surely to come from runaway deficits in a weakening economy with skyrocketing inflation. Curbing the scope of government and limiting its size to that prescribed by our Constitution is the goal that we should all seek, but political reality makes this option available to us only after a national bankruptcy has occurred. We need not face that catastrophe. What we need to do is to strictly limit the power of government to meddle in our economy and our personal affairs and stay out of the internal affairs of other nations. Now, I'd like to put in a little parenthetical thought here. Remember, I said George Gordon is on a hard money gold standard. I'm the only guy in my county. I buy, sell, trade. I do business in gold. I maintain my accounts in gold. I don't have a bank account. I don't have a Social Security number. I don't participate in the taxing programs. In other words, I'm a loner. I went back to practicing what my great-granddad was practicing in 1900 and 1890. It worked well for him. He was a big landowner in Northern California, in Mendocino County. And I figured, well, if gold and silver was good for him and it was good for our forefathers and it turned America into the world's greatest economic, military, and political power, could it do that for us again? I mean, it would be great if everybody in America would do this and our government would adopt the policy, but what if everybody in America wants to stick with paper? Do I have to go to hell in a handbasket with everybody else because they want to do that? Do I have to follow this multitude to do evil? So one day I woke up and said, gee, I think I'll make the change. And boy, has it made a big difference. I used to run a company called the Atlantis Manufacturing Company back in the 80s, 70s, and 80s in Boise, Idaho. I had 28 credit cards in my pocket. I had debt. I couldn't service the debt, and I looked into the future. I actually did the numbers in 1980, and I looked out into the future like the boys at Enron did. And I could see that it was unsustainable. That at an indefinite time in the future, the company would go belly up. We couldn't borrow money and service the debt. We could borrow more money, pay more interest, and service more debt, but we could never pay it off. So I said, it's time to liquidate this company. So we put it up and we liquidated it, paid off all of our debts. We all took our money and we went our separate ways. I went on the gold standard, hard money, and I have not been dissatisfied from that point to this. That was in 1981. I was 37 years old before I learned how to count. That was in 1978. Once I learned how to count, boy, it's been all downhill from that point on. That's what Ron Paul's pointing out. George Washington wrote a letter back in 1790. Based upon what he had observed over the 36 months from 1787 to 1790, he said, I can't believe the economic turnaround that has occurred in just 3 years by using hard money. Remember, our colonial forefathers were using that paper trash to finance the Revolutionary War. They went bankrupt. The currency just evaporated in 1783. Now what are we going to do? Well, we created a new nation, a new constitution, and we wrote out paper money and we wrote in gold and silver coin at Article 1, Section 10. Next time we're going to take a look at that. Edwin Vieira is the champion of hard money in America today. He, along with Ron Paul. It's no coincidence, Paul says, that during the period following the establishment of the Federal Reserve and the elimination of the gold standard, a huge growth in the size of the federal government and its debt has occurred. Believers in big government, whether on the left or right, vociferously reject the constraints on government growth that gold demands. Liberty is virtually impossible to protect when the people allow their government to print their money at will. Inevitably, the left will demand more economic interventionism, the right more militarism and empire building. Both sides, either inadvertently or deliberately, will foster corporatism. Those whose greatest interest is in liberty and self-reliance are lost in the shuffle. Though left and right have different goals and serve different special interest groups, they're all too willing to compromise and support each other's programs, especially soft money. If unchecked, the economic and political chaos that comes from currency destruction inevitably leads to tyranny, a consequence of which the founders were very well aware. For 90 years, we have lived with a central bank with at least 32 years absent of any restraint on money creation. The longer that process goes on, the faster the printing presses have to run in an effort to maintain stability. They're currently running at record rates. It was predictable, and it is understandable, that our national debt is now expanding at a record rate. The panicky effort of the Federal Reserve to stimulate the economic growth does produce what it considers favorable economic reports. Recently, they cited second quarter growth this year as 3.1%. Then in the footnotes, we find that military spending, almost all of which is overseas, of course, was up an astonishing 46%. This, of course, represents deficit spending financed by the Federal Reserve's printing press. In the same quarter, after-tax corporate profits fell 3.4%. Now, this is hardly a reassuring report on the health of our economy. It really reflects the bankruptcy of current economic policy. You get those numbers? The Fed comes out and says, my God, the economy grew at 3.1%. Boy, isn't that wonderful. Then in the footnotes, we find that military spending has increased 46% and corporate tax receipts have dropped by 3.4%. If your economy grows 3% and your revenues drop by 3.4%, are you making headway or are you losing ground? I mean, come on, boys and girls. Even with your public school education, surely we've got to be able to subtract 3.1 from 3.4. Surely an increase of 46% in spending with a 3.1% increase in our first quarter annual rate of economic growth, you know. Hey, boys and girls, we're headed in the wrong direction. So what they do is they cite to us the good economic statistics and then just ignore the bad ones. So you get half the picture, and therefore you make your conclusion based upon half of the information, and your conclusion is correspondingly inaccurate. We couldn't make those kinds of inaccurate conclusions if we were basing it upon gold and silver coin. Remember, your gold coin comes into existence as a commodity. It's produced by labor. Somebody had to go out and work and produce that stuff and put it into circulation, for which we had to work and produce to get it. We don't have one class of people prospering over another. The miner goes out and works and produces gold. He comes into the marketplace and trades his gold for boards so that he can build a house. The guy that's out in the marketplace working, producing the boards, is producing something, a commodity called wood, called lumber, to sell into the marketplace. Whether we use boards for money or whether we use gold for money is irrelevant. It just happens that gold is a little more portable, a little easier to use for gold, and it makes neat gold coins, so we use gold. But both of these men have worked and offset each other's labor, one producing boards, the other producing a useful commodity called gold. Alan Greenspan and the Fed produce nothing and consume much. They're non-producers, they're consumers. And what they're consuming is our livelihoods. Real economic growth is not going to return until confidence in the entire system is restored. And that's impossible as long as it depends on the politicians, not to spend too much money, and the Federal Reserve limiting its propensity to inflate our way to prosperity. Only sound money and limited government can do that. Now, next time, I'm going to take you through a little drill here. There's a fellow by the name of Edwin Vieira who wrote a book called Pieces of Eight. We'll take out the book Pieces of Eight, and we'll do a review. The Federal Reserve System, a fatal parasite on the American body politic. It's published by the National Alliance for Constitutional Money. It's a monograph, and we'll take a look from the perspective of the advocates of sound money as to what it is that we're advocating, and then we'll leave it up to you. You can decide. I don't need to tell you what to do. I just want to make sure that you get an opportunity to see both sides of the argument. Go ahead, get Modern Money Mechanics and the funny books from the Federal Reserve and become informed. And then let's take a look at Pieces of Eight and the other side of the coin, so that when we make our decision, we're not making our decision based upon half the facts, which is what they're giving us from the Federal Reserve. Half the story. All right, we're going to have to shut it off right about here. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and Law Hour, please go to my website, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the Gordon Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on my website. That's georgegordon.org. Well, there's the signal that says our time is up. We're going to have to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing. So until then, good night, friends.